Welcome to Business Innovators Radio, featuring industry influencers and trendsetters sharing proven strategies to help you build a better life right now.
Welcome back to another episode of Business Innovators Radio. I am your host, Marco Salinas, and I've got with us here today a very special guest, Mr. Jaime Sepulveda. Jaime is the owner of SPM Property Management and has been doing this for a very, very long time. He has a total of about 15 years or so of experience in this space, and we are excited to learn more about the property management world and his knowledge and all of his expertise. Jaime, thank you for joining us today on the program.
Marco, so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, my friend.
Okay, Jaime, let's go ahead and dive into some of these questions that I have for you here. The first question I have is, what types of properties do you manage with Strategic Property Management?
So we specialize, our niche we have found to be single family and small commercial multifamily. And sometimes that gets confusing. What we consider small commercial multifamily is anything like a duplex, triplex, quadplex, anything up to 40 units. The reason that we cap it at 40 units is that we've learned that 40 units, once a property is already stabilized, can be managed remotely. And why that's important is that you will find investors that own properties that are 50 or up to 100 units apiece. They usually have to have a line item on their P&L that's staff. And that throws those numbers out of whack completely. So what we found is that our tools and resources, we can manage up to 40, and that alleviates the owners having that line item staff. And instead, we plug in property management with it, which is significantly cheaper than actually having someone on site of the community.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So you've narrowed down, you already know from trial and error, there's a certain number that you don't want to go over. You have basically a certain type of sweet spot.
Correct. Yes, I wait upon that.
Imagine, and the limit.
That sweet spot. Yeah. Now, I will say there are some exceptions every once in a while, and we're starting to see this a little bit more. So what's becoming popular right now are communities that are between that 40 and 75 units. Now, those are projects that we will definitely look at. And the reason we look at is they're new projects. They're new construction. So with new construction, as you can imagine, there's a lot less oversight in these properties. So something like that, we will definitely take a look at. It's a case-by-case situation. But as that product starts becoming more popular, and if we really start seeing it expanding in our market, that is something in the work that we're going to have to look at. Because at the end of the day, with today's technology, we're afforded so much flexibility in the sense of remote accounting, first and foremost. And then, of course, secondly, having the right partnerships in the sense of boots on the ground, meaning contractors. Contractors are our eyes and ears. They're not necessarily just third-party contractors. They're basically our partners. We have long-term relationships with them. They know what our expectations are. We know what their expectations are. So when they're visiting out at a property and they see something out of sorts, they know that, hey, that's not necessarily what SPM or how SPM manages an asset. Let me give them a call. Let me inform them. So within strong partners and technology, we are able to manage most assets remotely.
I understand. Got it. That makes a lot of sense. I'm going to dive in a little deeper into some nitty gritty type questions that I think maybe a first time investor might have for someone like you. And one of those questions I think that's on the front of their mind is people want to know about timeframes, right? So if I turn the property over to you, can you give me an idea of how long it's going to take me to rent my home? Is that a simple black and white response, or are there a lot of different variables to a question like that?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's something that I think it's on top of mind. To your point on newer investors. So I wish I could say it was black and white. It's unfortunately not like many other things, right? However, like many other things too, with time and experience, you figure out patterns. And so when it comes to something like this, is there's a in our markets in the San Antonio and surrounding areas, there's times of year where you see a larger pool of people looking to rent. That at the same time actually correlates with also with time that you can get the best rates for your vacancies. So what we have found is between March and the end of July is where you have the majority of individuals moving, thinking about moving, kids starting new schools. This is being military city USA. We have a lot of military coming in and out. So what I would tell an individual asking me that question is, first and foremost, is let's make sure that we position ourselves during this time frame, which helps you capitalize on how quick you can rent the property and how much you can get for your property. Now, that's probably the basic answer for your question. If you wanted to kind of dive a little bit deeper into that, want to talk about, well, what about conditions and location, right? That plays a big factor as well. There's many locations in San Antonio and surrounding areas that rent well. There's some areas that just don't. So these are conversations that we have at the very beginning. It says, hey, tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell me a little bit about your goals. Tell me a little bit about the assets. Where are they located? Because then we can narrow it down, right? Also, at the same time, with location is condition. So what kind of condition is it in? If it's in poor condition, most of the times we're gonna have a conversation or a walkthrough on the property and say, hey, if you rent it as is, this is how much you can rent for. If it's really poor condition, we're always going to recommend investing a little bit into it. Now, let's make that clear that up a little bit. Why would we suggest investing money into it if maybe we're just upping the rent just a bit? Well, there's something next to it that you really want to pay attention to, is liability. You definitely don't want to put yourself in a situation where you're leasing an asset and you have open liability where you end up getting sued, where you end up in some sort of liability or lawsuit that's going to cost you a lot more than if you would have done some of the repairs, upgraded some of the items, and most definitely make the property to property code 92, which is basically all rental properties in the state of Texas have to abide by. So those are the items that we definitely want to make sure that we're taking care of. So that's the entry conversation that we have. And sometimes clients or investors aren't aware that, hey, you know what? If we invested X amount, we can rent it for X more. Says, hey, there's those numbers and see how they work for me. It's about having the relevant information, right? So those are the conversations that we would have when it says, how much can it rent for? How quickly can you rent it? Let's have that conversation. And at the end of that conversation, I can tell you exactly how much you can rent for and a better scope of what timeline to expect.
Man, that is very, very helpful information. And those are all such important points to consider. And a lot of things that probably when you're looking to rent the thing, you're just thinking, you know, bottom line, dollars and cents, which, you know, is understandable. But with an experienced property manager like yourself, this is what someone looks for. They need that guidance. They need that coaching to make sure that these other things are considered first before you get to that next point of, you know, how long is this going to take? You know, we need to take care of steps 1, 2, and 3 here, or A, B, and C first before we can necessarily know that. But that's where your knowledge and your expertise all obviously comes in. Can you expound maybe just a little bit further, Jaime, on the actual process? What does the actual rental process look like when you guys are in control of the show and you're holding the reins for that investor?
Sure. This one we could probably bring it up into two parts. First part is your standard, strategic property management, we have a property that we'd like to transition over to you guys. Can you help us out with it? That would be one. And the second one would be, hey, strategic property management, I'm looking to acquire a property for as an investment. Can you help me out? So I would phrase it into those two scenarios. The first scenario being, hey, I've got a property. I would like for strategic property management to take it over. Well, first and foremost, it's kind of an interview, right? Because like, hey, tell me about yourself. Tell me about your goals. Tell me about this asset. And we walk through it. We give some suggestions just based on that conversation. We make sure that our numbers are in line in the sense of what rents they're getting or what rents they're expecting to get. Let's make sure that we're on the same page at that point, first and foremost. And if at that point we are, the next step is we ask them to be able to do a physical walkthrough on the property. If the client's able to meet us, great, it's even better because we can have the face-to-face there at the property. So what we do during that inspection is to make sure that everything checks out based on our conversations, make sure that we're seeing the true condition of the property, making sure we're seeing the, which is also something that a lot of individuals forget, is the surrounding properties. There's many times where we see a good property, a good asset. However, their immediate neighbors, there's some sort of issues that can drastically bring down not only the rate of the rent, but how long is it going to take to rent? So we want to confirm all of that. And while we're at the property, many times there's opportunities to bring up what's called value adds, identify value adds. Hey, this property is great. What we see and what we consider, we call it market relevant value adds. And what that means is that you can go into any house and say, for example, you want to put in high-end cabinets and high-end floors and high-end countertops. That doesn't mean that you're going to recoup all that money back on all the properties. So we want to make sure that we're market relevant in the renovations that we recommend. Hey, we know that this area, if you do this type of cabinet, this type of countertops, this type of flooring, you're going to get your biggest bang for your buck, right? So let's identify what that is. And then give you true numbers. And then what could it rent for if you would go down that line? And then that way, the client or the prospect at that point has the opportunity to actually put pen to paper and see, hey, this works for me. This doesn't work for me. At that point, we have the next conversation is, hey, SPM, everything's a fit. I want to go the route of just renting as it is, or I want to go the route that I want to do the renovations. Great. Then at that point is when we enter into an actual agreement. Prior to that, it's conversation, it's education, it's just making sure that we're all a good fit for each other, right? So and then of course we go through agreements, we jump on board, and then we get it done. If it's vacant, let's get it linked to a qualified resident. If it's not vacant, let's make sure that we make proper introductions to the current resident. Make sure to educate them, let them know who we are, what the benefits they are, what benefits they have now be under the SPM umbrella, and because it's in transitions, a lot of people always get a little iffy about transitions. So now we're going to transition. Does that mean that they're going to raise my rent? Are they going to want to come into my apartment anytime they want? Well, let's squash all that up front, because while yes, our agreement is with our investor, our client, we like to educate the resident, let them know, hey guys, we're here for you guys as well. We're making sure that your landlord, the owner of this property, is taking care of you and the property. Make sure that you have a good home to live in, to raise your family, to grow memories. At the end of the day, this is your home while you are here as a resident. So once we have that conversation, they feel more at ease. And guess what? If they feel more at ease, they're more comfortable, they're willing to stay at the property longer, they're taking care of the property better, and in turn, that's a better resident for the landlord because there's less turnover and less maintenance at the end of the day. So that's the simple turnover. The next one is, if you would like me to expand on, if it's a client that's looking, hey, I'm looking to acquire property, what's the process?
Yes, please.
Okay. So the second part of that is if we get an investor that comes in and says, hey, SBM, we're looking to add another to our portfolio, or we're looking to purchase our first investment property. What does that look like? So first and foremost, same interview. Let's talk about what our goals, because at the end of the day, that's all of us, right? On the personal and professional line, what are our goals? It's so important to identify that. And we want to make sure we're in line with them, because at the end of the day, not everybody's always a fit with everybody. And we always want to do that upfront. Life is too short There's a lot of property managers out there. There's a lot of investors out there. There's no need for all of us to be butting heads, right? Says we want to work with you because you want to work with us. So that's what we identify at the beginning. And then at that point, we start the process of financing our capital. What kind of capital are we working with? What kind of financing are you looking for? Do you need help financing? Let's talk about some of the options. We have great financing partners as well. So we go down that route. Once all that is taken care of, all right, what kind of asset are we looking for? What can we afford here? Let's narrow that down. Once we get that going, once we do identify an asset, and this is something that I think is something particular to us, is, and this is something we've been doing for a while, and I know that some others are doing it now, but I know at the beginning no one was we'd always tell a client, hey, when the inspection is being done during your due diligence period, your option period, you need to let the property manager know, or your property manager, or us, whoever it may be, because they need to be part of that inspection. Going back to the first example, where is that the property manager gets to go in there and they see everything the inspector sees. They're able to identify more value adds. They're able to identify any pitfalls, if any possible ones there. We take in our contractors during that inspection as well. Once again, so we get live numbers on actual value adds that we see or repairs that we see. So that way, when the inspector walks away, the property manager walks away, our contractors walk away, we're able to provide the relevant information to our client right then and there during their option period. So they're not wasting time outside their option period trying to renegotiate because, oh, well, I thought that this, there's no I thought anymore, is that we've got all the relevant information. So once that also helps us with the negotiations, because if we're during an option period and, hey, and your property manager said they saw X, Y, and Z, and together with the inspection report, that gives you more leverage to negotiate, right? So we pass out of the option period. And then once we already know closing is coming, for example, it's coming in 20 days, we're already working on a plan with our clients to say to clients, okay, so based on the inspection report, based on our findings, based about the value adds, based on the estimates that we've already got, what is it that we want to invest in here? What items? So let's do X, Y, Z. Great. So now we're already scheduling for 20 days. We're scheduling crews already to get that done, say on day 21. We're minimizing downtime. We're getting in there. We're already doing the market relevant work or renovations that need to be done on there to get that property up and running ASAP. We're not killing time or wasting time. Because you'd be surprised how many times we do have a client that comes, or our prospective comes up, hey guys, we just closed on this property. We want you to manage it. That's great. We want to manage it, but it takes a few days for us to do what we just described. And now we're just kind of killing time or wasting time. So we always tell anybody, whether it's our clients or other clients, always get your property management crew involved during your inspection and throughout it. So that way, when you're closing, you're rocking and rolling, right?
Yeah.
So that's how we handle the second part. So that's what a client of ours that's coming in and buying something new or adding to the portfolio is something that they can expect. And of course, after we complete that, then on the back end, what do we do? Well, now let's get it occupied with a qualified resident. Let's get all the due diligence done on that. And then let's get some revenue coming in for you guys.
Man, I mean, I'll tell you what, I thought I knew some things about the property management world, but in this short conversation so far, I've already learned a lot. So
great.
It's very obvious. It's very, very, very obvious that all your experience is just really coming through in these answers. And I'm being educated right here on the spot. So I know that this information is going to be very, very helpful for those that hear it or read it. And so thank you for what you've shared so far. Here's another really big one for you. People, I think, that own properties sometimes feel like, you know, I'm pretty good with my hands, and you know, I'm kind of the fix it man, you know, for my family, and I can fix a toilet if I have to fix a toilet, and I can change out a you know, a faucet if a faucet breaks or what have you. And so maybe I can just do this myself. Maybe I can be the one to manage my own properties. But sometimes there's unforeseen things that are out there. Sometimes maybe we can potentially stunt our own growth as an investor by thinking that we're going to save a few dollars and go ahead and tackle some of these little projects ourselves. Perhaps there's an opportunity cost there that's being missed by not outsourcing this to someone else. So the question is, why should I hire someone to manage my properties instead of just, you know, managing them myself?
That's a great question. Well, first and foremost, you hit on several. Most investors have the mindset and actually the ability to do a lot of these, your standard repairs or managing their own properties, because it's definitely not rocket science. But like anything else, it's systems, processes, the right people in the seats to get it done the most efficient as possible. And let me expand on that. So let's talk about repairs, right? So yes, you're renting your property. Of course, like it happens, it's either late night weekends or holidays where the phone rings and says, hey, landlord, my toilet is overflowing. And I don't know what to do to it as well. At that point, you are the landlord. Maybe you're with family. Maybe you're in a meeting. Maybe you're out of town, whatever that may be. Says, hey, I can't get there, but turn off the water and I'll get to it like in 2 or 3 days when I be back. When I get back, I'm going to stop by them. The first thing I do is I'm going to stop by there. Sure. That works. Now, in that simple scenario, so many things can go wrong. First and foremost, let's say that the water that's coming up is sewage water, right? By guidelines, if that's not being addressed in the contract, it says a timely manner, TREC, our governing source, considers the timely manner 24 hours. If it's not being addressed within 24 hours, all of a sudden now the resident has legal rights to bring a suit, right? So at that point, now you're possibly opening up yourself for a bigger can of worms, right? So maybe that simple fix is just plunging in or auger, sure, but now the liability is leaving you wide open. And that's on a simple issue. Imagine if it's something more where the ceiling is leaking, or there's the roof leak from rain, or there's water coming in between the floors and it's gushing out from the light bulb. You as a landlord better be prepared to jump on that, especially in a society as we live in now, where individuals are very knowledgeable in what their rights are. It's very easy for them to find legal representation today that they're going to jump all over it. Now, many times you will also see where the suits doesn't come through. It doesn't prevail. But it still costs you, landlord, time and money to get that. So did you really win? Not necessarily. We see that a lot. Right. So that's a liability side. Opportunity cost. Yes, it's taken away from your core competency. Most investors have another core competency that they need to be focusing on. For the cost of a good property manager, if you were to pencil it out, most of the times it's going to pay 3 times the amount more than what it is that it's taken away from you, from whether it be your actual career or your family. Another one that I see out there so we call that DIYers, right? Do-it-yourself landlords. Another one that I see is many times they leave money on the table. They believe that their property can rent for X amount. In all actuality, they can maybe rent it for more. Or many times they think it's worth more than it really is, and it stays on the market for months because nobody's renting it because they're renting it too high. And by the time they do lower it and get rented, guess what? Those 3 months of insurance, taxes, mortgage outweighed any savings that you would have had there. So I believe those would be the 3 top ones why, in my opinion, a serious or intentional investor should have a property manager. Property manager is a part of your team. It's not a luxury expense. It's not like, maybe I want to spend, I want to explore to hire a property manager. I truly believe it's part of a team that consists of course, the investor, starting with the investor. You got the property manager that's got the majority of contacts, that being contractor vendors, lenders, insurance. So it brings a full gamut of tools and resources, like a toolbox, right? That a property manager brings. So the investor not only can focus on their core competency, but they can also focus on building their investment portfolio. Instead of spending time trying to deal with residents, trying to deal with maintenance issues, let's spend some time on, hey, I want to look at another property. How can I grow and build? What can I leverage on this property? Is there any equity? Do you have any suggestions or any loan options that you know out there, or lenders that you can refer me to, that maybe I can leverage whatever equity I have here to roll it into another property? Those are conversations that you have with your property manager. Because both of you guys are very intimately involved with this asset or this portfolio. So those are the reasons I think I would say it would be important for an investor to have a property manager on their team.
Yeah, very, 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 very important information that you share, that you brought up. Sometimes we just overlook the... In our attempt to maybe be frugal, right? Which is, we have good intention in any attempt to be frugal in our lives and the things that we're doing. But sometimes our frugality is kind of like that, I've heard some type of a phrase or a saying that's like, don't trip over the pennies on your way to get those dollars, That's kind of what that is in a sense, right? I think we're trying to scrimp and save and save a few dollars. And in reality is we actually probably end up losing out on things. A friend of mine has a very successful landscaping business. And one of the things that he shared with me that always stood out to me was that he said, every one of my clients has a lawnmower in their garage or in their shed. It's not that they don't have the tools and the resources to get this thing done. It's that they've all finally come to that realization of just how valuable their time is as our most valuable asset, right? Money is something that we can always go out and find ways to earn more of, but we all share the same 24 hours in a day, every single one of us. And so if you are especially that type of person that's has family or values your time or is trying to leverage your investments to grow bigger, that's one of those things that you really have to get serious. If you haven't got there yet, I think it's really important to make sure that you're spending some time on this question right here that Hyman just covered, and making sure that your mind is open, because you really truly are missing out on bigger opportunities to go ahead and leverage your time to go and find another property. You're too caught up in the nitty gritty. You could have spent that time and energy maybe on finding the next one. So this is really, really good information. I mean, thank you very much for sharing that one. That I think is one of those really key and important items, that falls under your services and your category of what you do.
Great. Glad it could be a help.
Okay, Hyman, that's really good information. Let's go ahead and keep on moving. The next question that I have for you is, and I know that this is another one of those questions that's definitely not going to be a black and white, but a lot of people have in their mind, very much top of mind, as a matter of fact, if they're going to hire a property management company, they probably want to know the dollar amount. How much is my home going to rent for? I would imagine you probably have a system and a formula to determine that, and it's going to probably vary property by property, obviously. Maybe you can go a little deeper on that.
Absolutely. That's a great question because, of course, that's one of the main factors on what your return on investment is. What will the asset be renting for? And to your point, is it black and white? No. However, the best process and system is being able to identify what those rates are going to be as early as possible. And what I mean early as possible is that if you're just acquiring a property, let's make sure that we identify a true number on what the property rents for right now and what can possibly rent for in the future. What direction is that area kind of going? So then you have an accurate number to kind of go base yourself on moving forward. Now, of course, if you already have an asset and we want to know how much it rents for, best and first foremost thing we would do is do what's called a market analysis. On the market analysis, what we do is we take as many like properties as possible immediately in that area and within the past 3 to 6 months and try to get a good idea of what the market's dictating in price point there. Now, once we do that, we can get a number. And then, of course, what also goes along with that is what condition is the property in? What immediate area is it in? All that will play a factor on how much the property would rent for. And kind of going back to at the very beginning is the biggest factor here is any investor, and we can't stress this enough to any of our current or prospective clients, is that when acquiring an asset, really align yourself with a strong property manager. That way they can give you real numbers. And why I say real numbers, I'll give you a prime example. Last week, we had at that point was a prospect come to us and ask us, hey, SPM, we just closed on a property and we're ready for you guys to kind of take it on. And of course, while we're always here to help and we're always grateful for new business, before we can say, yay, we're in, we do a full analysis up front and says, hey, let's take a look what you got, what you have, where we're going. So make sure we're on the same page. So what ends up happening in that specific situation was that once we did our market analysis, we got to see the property, we came up with a game plan. And let's just say for rough numbers that we said, hey, Mr. or Mrs. Client, this property is going to rent for $1,000. Oh, no. Our realtor said that it's going to rent for $1,300. And in that situation is why we want to involve your property manager at the beginning. So what had happened in that situation was that I'm sure it wasn't a malicious act or did they do it intentionally, but a lot of time real estate agents or maybe selling brokers, they might not have the full understanding of what the rental market looks like. I'm sure they are phenomenal on the acquisition side, but a lot of times on the rent side, they don't have the experience of what items tenants or prospective tenants are looking for in that particular area. That plays a big factor what your rent will be. A tried and true property manager will take not only what the market analysis says, what the actual property condition is, and what the actual surroundings of that asset are to give you a solid number. So that's why we say involve your property manager as soon as possible. So that way you don't get put in the position of, well, I thought my property was going to rent for this. Now it's this. Now my numbers don't work.
Right.
That kind of makes some sense.
It makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And that's very insightful information. And I think, you know, I'm not surprised that you had a good system in place like that. So just for clarification, though, you guys do offer that market analysis yourself, right? That's something that if somebody comes to you, they can expect that you guys are going to go behind the scenes, do the dirty work, do the digging, and make sure that you're aware of what the other properties in your market are going for so that you don't come up short, right? You don't go too low because, hey, we already know by doing this research that this is kind of the average price for your square footage, et cetera. Am I right on that?
You're absolutely on point. And I like the way you mentioned behind the scenes. There is so much that gets done behind the scenes that plays such a crucial factor to make a very profitable or a good experience when you're acquiring and then owning a real estate investment property, right? You mentioned about market analysis and about the service that we provide. We absolutely provide it. And it's not necessarily for only clients. I mean, that's not something that we would even charge for prospective clients simply because we know that is such a valuable number to have. We don't want any investor to kind of go out there off of false numbers. And that literally throws off their full projection without even knowing it until it's too late. So by all means, upfront, no cost, we just want any investor just to have the relevant information at the relevant time to be able to make the proper decision moving forward.
Yeah, I love that. I absolutely love that. So you guys and SPM, you're going to provide all that information, even if you're not necessarily a client, or you may not even become a client, but even just talking to you guys, you're going to walk away with a lot of useful information. So I think that definitely says a lot about you and about your business practices. Imagine what it's going to be like once you are a client of SPM. So I think that definitely says a lot.
That's a good point. We're big on relationships at the end of the day. That's one of our top priorities. Are we property managers? Absolutely. Do we need help in various project management services? Yes, that's what we're here for. But first and foremost, we know that as in any business relationship, it starts with the relationship. That's what allows us to have do great business upfront, during, and after any transaction. And it's long-term relationships.
Very good. Thank you, Jaime. So what does SPM do to actually, what is your process to actually get the house rented?
Okay. Yeah, so getting the house rented is, first and foremost, let's make sure that the investor and us are on the same page in the sense of where we're going with it. We want to make sure, going back to our previous question, the rents, right?
Oh, yes.
Are we on the same page where this is how much the rent are going to be? Phenomenal. Now let's get it ready. We identified all the value adds. Let's say that everything's already in place. All the relevant market renovations have been done. At that point, what we ideally want to do is we want to position our clients to be leasing a property in between the months of March and the end of July. That's what in this market we call was peak season. That's where you have the highest amount of individuals looking to rent. That's the time of year that you are able to get the best, capitalize on the highest rates of rent during that time period. So that would be first. If we can position our clients' asset to go on the market during that time frame, that's the first step of being able to do that. Let's identify that. The second thing is, once we start marketing the property, we market on approximately 60 plus online platforms. All your big name ones that everyone's heard of is Trulia, HomePads, Zillow, and going down the line to 50 plus other different ones that are out there, right? Now in today's markets, 85% of individuals looking to move, first and foremost, start online. The second largest factor there is at that point, actually talking to a real estate agent. And of course, if it goes to the real estate agent, first thing they do is jump on the MLS. And of course, we have our properties on the MLS as well. So between those two factors, we cover the lion's share of reach to clients. Once that happens, of course, the properties are being promoted and marketed. The next thing is, how do we fill it? Who is the target for these properties, right? Because like anything else, there's a lot of interest in properties, but it doesn't mean that it's always a good fit. And that's something else that a good property manager comes into place is, they know the nuances, what to look for, what not to look for, some red flags when certain applications come through. So like we tell our clientele is, not only we're going to fill it with a tenant, we're going to fill it with a qualified resident. What we tell our clients as well is that, yes, you know what? Sometimes our screening process might take an additional day or two up front. But what we have learned about history is that we would rather take a day or two up front, making sure we have all the boxes checked for a qualified resident, than rush into something and enduring the tenancy, have to go through the eviction process. That's going to cost us a lot more than just 2 days and some money, of course.
Yeah.
So that's kind of our process on how we start. Making sure the property is ready, make sure it's on the right marketing platforms. Let's make sure that we're getting qualified residents into that asset. And then, of course, now at that point, let's launch onto the property management side of
building resident relationships, because we want to build those resident relationships, because the longer or the better resident relationships we have, the more comfortable they are, the more comfortable the residents are, the longer they stay, the better they take care of the property, which ultimately comes full circle on how that benefits the investor.
Yeah, definitely. I love how you clarified that. I think sometimes when you're doing it yourself, you're thinking, okay, all I got to do is just spread the word, right? Let's get the word out there so that everybody knows that this property is here and we get as many applicants as we can and we get it rented. You know, typically a lot of people just want it rented really fast. But sometimes it's probably a good idea. And I'm sure from your experience in doing this so long, you can probably confirm this, but if you're renting it, it's not a bad idea to pump the brakes a little bit and make sure that you are spending some time filtering that list to get the right tenant in there. And otherwise, it will cost you more, you know, time, energy, hassle, and of course, most of all, money, and having to go through this whole process all over again, because now you have to, unfortunately, evict the tenant.
Yeah. No, absolutely. No, you're absolutely on point on that. It's definitely worthwhile everybody's time and money to be able to, first and foremost, have the right system in place to do the screening. And then second of all, to have the opportunity to do it at a pace that you're not rushing into a mistake. Now, don't get me wrong. None of us have a crystal ball. Even good tenants can go bad.
Of course.
Decrease our probabilities drastically by just taking a slow, methodical approach to it.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely. Now, the next two questions, Jaime, very much relate to that subject matter. So first and foremost, how do you guys, SPM, handle the lease contracts? And does the tenant, does the investor, the owner of the home, do they need to get involved in that?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Good question. So how we manage the, once we have a qualified resident, of course, all the proper documentation gets implemented. And this kind of crosses over to a previous question of the DIY landlord, right?
Yes, exactly.
We make sure that we use promulgated, TREC forms. TREC is Texas Residential Real Estate Commission. They're the governing source within Texas. They have promulgated forms that in the state of Texas are very landlord friendly. Now, those are the forms that we use. Those are the forms that I recommend to be used, because they are tried and true over tens, if not hundreds of thousands of leases throughout the state of Texas, written by Texas attorneys, to be able to cover as much as possible or many scenarios as possible. So for when and if there happens to be a contractual question or scenario, the contract is there to assist. And that minimizes a lot of legal hassle, a lot of legal fees. So that's where we start. We start with those forms. And a lot of times the DIY landlord isn't aware of that, because there are tons of forms that you can buy online. However, I have never seen one that as meticulous and as landlord friendly as the promulgated forms through Texas Residential Real Estate Commission. So we start there, right? Once that is taken care of, we make sure that all forms are signed in a timely manner. The reason I say timely manner is, I'll give you another example. I think a couple of months ago, we had a property that was on the market. John Doe says, hey, I want that property. They submitted application. They were qualified. Everything checked out. We send out the lease agreement. We want them to sign that lease agreement within 24 hours. And the reason I say 24 hours is because once they sign the the form, at that point, the property is now theirs. However, if we wait more than 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours, each time that the more that time goes, well, that's more time that the property is not being leased or marketed. So if we don't put those parameters, saying like in this situation, the tenant didn't sign within 24 hours. So what happens? We're still marketing the property. There was another applicant that comes in and they were very well qualified. John Doe, the first applicant, comes back and says, hey, but that was my property. They didn't, because they didn't guide by the guidelines. We mentioned we have another applicant says, well, no, I still want it as a spy. So we worked it out where they can still, they were able to still, sign, apply for it. And that's fine. It worked out that way and they were able to get it. The second applicant, we were actually able to position them to a different property that met their needs as well. But my point in saying that is that a lot of times if you don't put those parameters, and we have seen this happen, where it just goes on days and days and days, and at the very end, say on the fifth, sixth day, all of a sudden they say, hey, you know what? Never mind. We don't want it. But now you have 5-6 days of prime real estate that wasn't leased. And we're wasting our clients' time. It's just more days on the market. So those systems need to be in place. That way, once again, if the property isn't leased, well, nobody's making any money. Revenue's not coming in for the investor. So we need to make sure that while we are being, while we are holding those timelines, but at the same time, let's be efficient during that time that we have. So how we approach that is that we have a conversation with our investors up front, knowing that, letting them know that once again, we don't do this once or twice or five times in a year. This is what we do. So we've learned how to, what red flags to look for. While our systems, once again, we go through them at a good pace. However, it's very efficient because there is that process.
Yeah.
We notify the investors or our clients that, there's no need for them to be part of that. Cause the last thing we want to do, not that everyone will, but the last thing that we want is to bring emotion into that process. And the reason I say that is a lot of individuals might start, looking and say, well, I see that it's a young couple, or I see, oh, well, I see this and I see that. Now we start getting in a very gray area where we might be infringing on breaking some sort of act of either whether it's federal or state act on being discriminated. And what to that? Well, now you got more liability. And once again, they don't know. They don't know that they're making a decision based on, oh, the law might look at it as discriminatory. They're just trying to be kind. But once again, that's why we are here. We know what lines can be crossed and which ones cannot. So that's why it's best to allow the property manager to run their course on approving a qualified resident.
I got it. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So you did all the work. You listed the property. It went out there. You got a great tenant in the door. You vetted them well. You handled the lease contract. You made it very, very easy so that the owner and the investor didn't have to worry about any of that. But then, as you stated earlier, even though you do the best that you can, sometimes with people, life can happen. Sometimes you'll have a great tenant, but then something will happen in their life that maybe they didn't plan or anticipate, like a divorce or a job loss or what have you, or illness. The next thing you know, you're facing that situation where they can no longer pay their rent. How does the tenant eviction process work with you, Jaime, and SPM?
Good question. So now that's a great question in reference of the reality that we all know life happens, right? Yes. So sometimes what we call it is good tenants go bad sometimes. So if we happen to have to go to the eviction, what the process looks like is the contracts are written up that rent is due on the first. They've got grace period into the third of the month. By the fourth of the month, if they do not have, if there's no payment has been processed, we have 3 days until that we keep contacting them, whether it be email, text, or phone. At that point, we send out a late notice. It has to go out certified mail. We send it out. They receive it. We get their signature response back. There's still no activity. At that point, now we're able to go file for eviction in the Justice of Peace Court that corresponds to wherever the asset may be located at. In the San Antonio, Bexar County area, normally with that, the time frame that looks like, it's usually they give you about a 2-week appointment. So okay. 2 weeks out from there, you're getting an appointment to visit in front of the judge. During that 2 weeks, that county goes out to the property, posts notice on the property, letting the occupants know that they have a date, a court date of whatever date it is. And then that day comes. Day of court comes. It's the judge, the attorney, the judge, the resident, and us or an attorney. And everybody states their case. Going back to the forms where it's so important, this is where it really comes into play. Many judges, as they should be, are going to be very meticulously looking at the contract. If that contract is not, first and foremost, updated, or if it's not filled out correctly, the judgment can very easily go towards tenant. And at that point, you would have wasted a lot of time, a lot of money already going into it. And now you have a property that hasn't been creating any revenue, and you have a resident that now is legally able to stay there for possibly another, say, another 30 days until you start the process over again. So that's another aspect of why the contracts are so important. That's when the judge is really going to be looking at them. Our track record, I'll be honest with you, I don't have an exact number, but I would say in court, we're probably somewhere in the 95 and even up percentile of being able to acquire the property after that first visit with the judge. So once that happens, you get the verdict. At that point, the judge tells the client, either depending on the judge, but sometimes they'll give them 3 days, sometimes they'll give them 5 days to be out of the property. So what happens is we put on our calendar the third day or the fifth day, whatever the judge allotted. We visit the property that day. If they are still in the property at that point, we have to go back to that court and file what's called a writ of possession. That writ of possession, normally, once again, on average in Bexar County, you'll have something within 7 to 10 days. And what that means is that 7th or 10th day, you are legally able now to visit the property and be able to exit the residence. What that process looks like is that 7th or 10th day that we're scheduled, not only do we schedule ourselves, we schedule moving contractors. We're scheduled with the Bexar County Sheriff Department, in that county. And the locksmith. We go, we visit the property. If they are still in the property, the sheriff, the Bexar County Sheriffs, they'll escort the residents out. The movers have to exit all the furniture out into the front of the property. Once everything is vacated, locksmith locks and secures the asset. That's the process on a full eviction for the most part. And within our county, we've been successfully being able to remove probably within that 20 to 30 day mark. And believe it or not, Texas is one of the best in doing that. You'd be surprised how many other states take twice, maybe three times the amount to be able to remove a resident. But now that's the full course. Many times it doesn't go that. It doesn't go all the way. It depends on the communication. Many times, even after the 3-day notice, we're able to work something out with the resident. And if it's something to do, if it's some sort of scaling or whatever that may be, we talk with the investor, we inform them what the plan is. If they are in agreement on it, at that point, we can move forward. Many times the day of court, mid-month time frame, if they do show up, they're willing to, or they're able to pay that amount, and then whatever late fees they may have, however that maybe works, it might work out there, and then everything kind of moves forward. Sure. But every case is a little bit different. At the end of the day, as long as your property manager is able to understand the value that it's not just let's file and just go all the way through the writ, because that's wasting a lot of time, a lot of money, and a lot of time that's necessary. But many times with some good communication, you can decrease a lot of that and still bring in the appropriate revenue that was intended for.
Sure. Yeah, that's really good information. Probably the most frustrating or painful part of that process, but it is part of that process. It's the nature of it all. But it looks like you've got a lot of things in place to really minimize that. And then if it does unfortunately happen, you also have a lot of things in place to make sure that you can kind of get the investor back on track as quickly and smoothly as possible. You really can't ask for much more than that. So you guys really streamline that and make that a very, very simple, pain-free as possible process for your investors. Going back to, you know, now that we've kind of got that out of the way, let's go back to kind of a normal scenario again. Who pays for the repairs on the property if something breaks?
Absolutely. So on your day-to-day operations, so how that looks like is once a resident submits on their online portal, they submit a maintenance request. And let's call it the air conditioner not functioning. We allocate the appropriate vendor to get out to the property. The vendor assesses what the issue is. They provide us documentation of what the issue is. At that point, we assess it. We contact our client and says, hey, Mr. or Mrs. Client, the HVAC at 123 Main Street has gone down. The issue is XYZ. We have a technician on site, or if it's something that they were on site and they're ordering parts, whatever that may be. And then we go through that process with them. The landlords, of course, or the investor is responsible for the cost of the parts and labor. We manage the resident and the coordination of the contractor performing the work.
Got it. Makes a lot of sense. Now, obviously, there are some repairs and things that you and your team have to get involved in, and obviously helping out the investor. One of the challenges, I think, is that people want to hire out the cheapest contractors available so they can keep their costs down, or they go and hire people that, you know, maybe somebody that they haven't done a very good job of vetting. Talk a little bit about your process, because in some of our conversations prior to this podcast, you know, I think that was one of the things that I personally was most impressed with is the way that you've handled those contractor relationships. So expound a little bit further on that, if you would, Jaime, please, on how you handle contractors. Are they the cheapest guys out there? Are these people you just barely met? What are you guys doing with that?
Yeah, great question. So our contractors and vendors, they're all third parties. However, throughout the years, we have learned that they are going back to, we're talking about relationships, not only with our clients, but with residents. Relationships with our contractors is key. And why that's key is they are a big part of any investment function, right? And what that looks like is we've all heard those stories about hiring a contractor, and many of us have gone through it, where we hire a contractor and we hire them for a specific job, and a few things happen. One, maybe they don't show up. Or two, maybe they do show up, they request 50% of the funds up front, and then second 50 when the job is complete. And then once they get paid the 50%, they don't show up again. I myself have been part of that. Early on in my investment career, I was taken for several thousands of dollars. And just based on same thing, like we're all trying to do. We're just trying to find a contractor to do X, Y, and Z. So what I've learned over the years is let's surround ourselves with the right people. And when it comes to contractors, they're as important as any other factor in our equation. Most of the contractors that we've been working with, we probably had a relationship with them six plus years. There's some contractors that have been with us for 8-10 years.
Okay.
And why that's important is, once again, is that we know these individuals aren't fly-by-nights to begin with. We know that these individuals are going to stand by the work that they do. We know that if there's ever a mistake or something missed, or something skipped, whatever the case may be, we know that these individuals are going to go back and make it right. They understand what our standards are. They understand what our client standards are. they understand that they represent us when they're at the property in front of the residents. When we send out a contractor to go fix an AC or a roof leak or a commode leak or a sink leak, whatever it may be, those residents don't know it's a third party. They know that SPM is their property manager, and for all they know is that is an SPM employee. So our contractors know that their presentation, their punctuality, their good manners with residents are a direct impact on our relationship with our residents. That is so much easier said than done. That takes a lot of time to cultivate that relationship. And our vendors feel the same. They're like-minded. And that's why we've been able to work so well with so many of our vendors for so long and have so much success in that avenue, because we are of like mind. They take great pride in their work. They understand that we are here in business because of our clients and because of our residents. At the end of the day, those parties need to be all together for us to all grow and evolve, right?
Yes.
So yes, we put a place a high value in our relationships with our vendors because of that. Without them, we're not able to do what we do.
And I think you nailed that on the head, Jaime. And like I said, that was one of the things that really impressed me. I just wanted to kind of give you the opportunity to talk about that on your own terms and from your point of view. But for myself, I was really impressed with that, because that's something that I think a lot of other companies, whether they're similar to yours or even in just, let's just say any industry, that is not an easy task to accomplish, making those type of relationships, forging those type of relationships. And then of course here, what's the hardest part, right? Making them last.
Yeah.
You know, anybody can go out and meet somebody new, but it's hard to keep those relationships in place for long periods of time. So I think that's a big, big testament to your success and what makes you guys so great.
It is. If I may interject something real quick, Michael, because I'm starting off with, hey, is it the cheaper one? So and so forth. We, at the very beginning, the first several years of our business, we made some big mistakes in that sense, because we were also looking for, hey, we need to find the cheapest contractor. Who's going to do the cheapest work? Because at the beginning, it's like our clients want the least amount of work or the cheapest rate, like we all do. What we found out is, of course, we're running into more issues. Contractors not showing up. They're not doing quality work. Or when they do show up, they're not presentable. And that started creating more issues, right? Because now not only is the issue maybe getting worse because it's not being done correctly, or two, maybe they did something that was inappropriate in front of a resident, and of course now they're upset, and that causes other layers of issues. And we're moving away at that point from having happy residents to having upset residents. So what we learned throughout the years is, because to get to the point where we are with our relationship with our contractors, to your point earlier, we have forged through a lot. And what we have forged through is many contractors, we would use them for X amount of time, and then we realized that we couldn't, because they weren't dependable. They weren't reliable. Their work wasn't what it was supposed to be. So it took us several years to be able to find the appropriate ones. So in reference to, are they the cheapest? I'll be the first one to tell you, most of the times, our contractors are not going to be the cheapest. The thing is, it's a broad term when you say the cheapest. Can I go on today Craigslist and find somebody to fix a commode for 20% less than what our vendors would? Absolutely. I have no doubt. I can look right. I can find it. You can find it. We all can. What I will also guarantee could possibly happen is that individual, first and foremost, probably not going to be licensed. And what happens if not licensed? We get back to the whole liability thing. They show up at the property, they do something wrong. All of a sudden, the landlord is on the hook for something greater than that 20% saved. What else is going to happen? Will they be around for warranty work? Well, many times that's not going to happen. Are the work that they do, is it going to be quality work? A lot of times it's not. And when it's not, many a times they're not going to own up to it. Are you going to make sure that they're treating the resident professionally? A lot of times that doesn't happen. So all those are values that I can pretty much guarantee are going to cost a lot more than any 20-25% that you're going to quote unquote save by calling another contractor, as opposed to our conversation with our clients. Hey guys, all that stuff that you fear as an investor in reference to contractors and the horror stories that you have heard about being taken for X amount of money or the work that's being shoddy, you guys don't have to worry about that. That's on us. We've taken care of all that, and we move forward, right?
Yeah. No, thank you for taking that extra time to add that and explain that. That's really, really good information. Continuing on, Jaime, let's go a little bit deeper on this conversation about maintenance. What should I, as an investor, expect regarding yearly maintenance costs?
That's a good one too. And so yearly maintenance costs, it's broad in the sense of there's different properties. We've got properties that are 100 plus years old. We got properties that are brand new built. So you can easily imagine that the maintenance on either one of those is going to drastically change from month to month, definitely from year to year. When we're acquiring a property, or we're in the process of assisting a client acquire a property, we always attach, depending on the age, if it's older than 20 years, we always attach a 10% miscellaneous line. And what that is that we're already forecasting that there's going to be a little bit more maintenance to be had at this property. So we forecast for that. If it's under 20 years, we do 5%. So that way, when we're forecasting out, we have that line item there. Is it, once again, unfortunately, we don't live in a black and white industry and we don't have that crystal ball. Many times we're under, many times we're over. But what the best thing any investor can do is, first and foremost, identify the condition of the property as is, work with a good PM, a good contractor to understand what a possible lifespan of your big CapEx item, right? Your AC unit, your roof, your water heater, your foundation. Where's that at? Hey, everything looks solid. Or hey, you know what? We already know that we have to change out a roof and a water heater. Okay, well, let's allocate for $30,000 within the next 12 months, 18 months, whatever that looks like. So you're going through the process. And when things pop up, as opposed to being an emergency because we're not prepared for it, it's more of an inconvenience, but we're prepared for it.
Yes.
Right. So that's kind of how we would address something. Says, well, what to expect on a yearly maintenance of a property. Unless we're talking about a specific property, at that point, maybe we can, of course, narrow down that cost.
Definitely. Let's go a slightly different direction now. Maybe looking at some of these properties that you're managing for other scenarios, aside from just strictly having it as a traditional rental. Do you assist with short-term rental property management like Airbnb type things, or do you just focus your specialty on traditional property management?
You know, right now that is such a popular product, right? Your short-term rentals. And many of them work out so well. So a little bit of background on that. This was probably 2017. We opened up a division that was doing short-term rentals. It only made sense. It was a good, it was a new product. It seemed interesting. There was a lot of potential in it. And, we started managing some short-terms. What we found out in our personal experience is that is a different animal to what your traditional long-term rentals are. And what I mean by that is when we first attempted to do that, we were forecasting that all the tools and resources that we already have built were going to be the tools and resources to be utilized for that product. What we found out is they're not built the same. And I'll give you a prime example.
Okay.
So in your traditional long-term, when a property goes vacant, we have an X amount of time to turn it around, right? Same thing with a short-term. However, the short-term is a lot quicker. I mean, we're talking about hours, maybe a day to turn. We didn't have those relationships to be able to do that. Those weren't our contractors that were set up to do that. We learned that that's very, just like what we do is we try to be very hyper-focused on what it is that we do. And we are always very conscious of that. But what we didn't know was that the short-term rental market was different than the tools and resources that we had. Short-term rental market is really driven by reviews, and that adds a different dynamic to it. So you, anybody who manages that needs to have the proper platforms to be able to manage those sort of factors. And that was not something that we had in our toolbox. So we dabbled in it for a little while and we realized, you know what, guys, this is not for us. We are not good at this. We're not doing our clients any justice on doing this. So what we did do is we then partnered up with a company that is what they focus on. That is what they are great at. And we were able to assist we were still able to provide a service to our clients that needed that service and point them into the direction of somebody that was going to be able to take care of the property adequately, as opposed to us, that was not our niche.
Yeah. No, I think that's really, it's one of those things that, like, you know, we don't always want to admit that, okay, maybe I shouldn't have gone this direction. Maybe, you know, I want to take on everything. And somehow or another, I'm not keeping up with the latest trend or what have you. And, you know, so there's that temptation to go and.
Sure. And you know this as well as I do, right? I mean, we're small business owners, we're entrepreneurs. We see an opportunity and that looks great. And I'm all for, hey, let's try it. But at the same time, to your point, know that you need to make a decision when it comes down to it. It's like, I am not helping my clientele.
Yeah.
This is not the service that I want, much less why I want to give this to anybody. But let's find some, because especially fast forward 5 years from then, right now you see a lot of this. Now there's a lot more companies that are specializing in it. And we can see the difference, because once again, we tried it. We know this side of it, and it's still a different animal. It really is. It's a different product. So that's what we would tell clients that have approached us with it. It says, every asset is different. Every area is different. We can advise on if this would be good for short-term rental area or asset. And if it is, we definitely point them in the right direction.
So you kind of established the fact that, hey, man, we're good at what we do. Let's stay in our lane. Let's talk a little bit about what your lane, a little bit more about what your lane is comprised of. Okay. So maybe you can kind of explain the difference for us, Jaime, between a single family and a multifamily property, or dare I even use the word apartment, right? Because I think a certain amount of small units can still be considered an apartment and maybe still fall within your scope of focus and service.
Yeah. So what we do at SPM, going back to focusing on what it is that you know works and the product that you are able to provide to a client, we specialize within single families and small multifamilies. Okay. Single family is our traditional homes, right? Where you have one bedroom, two bedrooms, up to five bedrooms. Those are single family homes. Then we have a residential multifamily. Residential multifamily consists of your duplex, triplex, and quadplexes. So if it's four units down to two units, that's considered a residential multifamily, we specialize that as well. Once you get into five units, that becomes commercial multifamily. And that can go all the way up to, you've seen these big apartment communities that have 500 apartments. That's considered commercial multifamily. So is five units. It's considered commercial multifamily. We, going to your point earlier, we've learned to stay in our layer, to focus and niche into the single family, the residential multifamily, and small commercial multifamily. And small commercial multifamily, we label it as up to 40 units. The way and reasoning we got up to 40 units is because we've learned that 40 units, we are able to manage remotely. What does that look like? What does that mean for an investor for their 40 unit apartment community to be managed remotely? Well, the biggest factor is cost. We've learned, looking at P&Ls over the years for multifamily, commercial multifamily assets, that usually somewhere about 100 units and under, one of the largest line items for an investor on their P&L is going to be staffing. Because of course, if you have a staff, you are not only paying payroll, but you're paying taxes, you're paying insurance. There's a lot of cost that goes along with having somebody on site. That number throws the numbers off so much that many investors are turned off on properties that are 100 and under because of that.
Yeah.
So we go in there and on property, on the units with 40 and under, we can manage this just as if it was a single family residential because we have all tools and systems and resources and people in place to do it. And we can do it remotely. So we eliminate that line item off their P&L for the investor, which helps them dramatically. And that helps them, of course, that reinvest that in another aspect. How can we better this community, right? Yeah. Which ultimately, that's what you're trying to do to increase your ROI, your rent, your return on investment. But so that's kind of why we focus just on that. We've done up to 40 units. We've done 35 units. We've done 32 units, all the way down to, of course, the duplexes. And not only that, on the managing side, there's also, and this might be a question for another, for a different question, but we also do what's called, we stabilize assets.
Okay.
And I'll briefly mention to you, tell me if we want to tie it into this or later, but we've taken on, say, a 32 unit where we had to completely vacate it to renovate it all and then reestablish it as an apartment community.
Okay. Tell me again, Jaime, what that phrase was.
So we stabilize a community. That's what it's like, stabilizing a community.
Stabilization of a community.
Yeah, that you can say that. Stabilization of a community. Basically, it's just a bad asset that has been poorly managed, poorly ran. The individuals that are occupying it are not the target of the new investor. So we have to go in there and completely clean house. And then after you clean house, then you have to renovate every unit.
Okay. I like that. Let me ask the question. You've already kind of answered a little bit. It's up to you if you want to go just a little bit more on it. Okay. But let me ask the question and then you can give some sort of a response. It's up to you how much more you want to go.
Got it.
What about if someone has an existing property, Jaime, and they're just not happy with how it's being run, and maybe that particular asset is performing poorly? Do you have the knowledge and the skills and the ability to actually turn that situation around?
Good question. So yes, absolutely. And what the process of that, and normally when we see that is when a new investor comes in, when a new investor acquires a new property, normally what we see is a client acquires a new asset, During the due diligence period that we have spoke of before, we've had at that point already identified that the property isn't performing as it should because the rents are lower than they need to be. Also identified that the current tenants are not the tenants that would get that property performing where it needs to be. So once all that is identified, we set up a game plan for the investor to say, okay, well, this is the proper process of how to, let's reclaim the property. Let's get it vacated. Let's identify, of course, all the value adds. Let's get it back up to par so it can start performing what it needs to be. Which is for the most part, you have all the systems and processes in place. It's a simple process if you know what you're doing on that side of it. Sometimes when it gets a little complicated is if it's a little bit of a larger project. For example, 2 or 3 years ago, we did, a client of ours was acquired in 32 units, apartment community. And, during our due diligence, of course, visiting the property, identifying the conditions, the surrounding areas, and the existing residents, we came up with a game plan of that was not the target. What we identified during that time was that not only was it being mismanaged in, say, well, not the proper rents were being allocated, none of the maintenance that should have been taken care of was being taken care of. And in result, they have a lot of residents that were just, they were not great people. I don't know how much in depth we want to go into that, but there were individuals that most investors would not want as landlords. I mean, as tenants.
Yeah.
Yeah. So where game plan was that we literally had to do about 32 evictions, which probably the process took, I want to say 3 to 4 months. Phase one was that is like, let's start cleaning house. And that takes about 3 or 4 months on a property about that size. And the legal situations that were going on there. The next phase is now let's start renovating the properties, and we need to allocate the proper phases, because what we want to do is we want to try and be able to start getting in revenue as quick as possible, but at the same time, not open up any liability for new tenants coming in while other construction is going on. So we allocated properly how we could be able to do that. We start renovating the properties. We're renovating anywhere between 7 to 10 at a time. And while phases were being done, we would be able to promote markets, that phase, start filling them while the next phases are being completed as well. And at the end, it was probably about a 9 to 10 month project altogether. Once we're finishing the last phase, of course, that's when the last phase starts getting filled up. And then full circle, now you've got a stabilized asset. Sure. You went from completely in the ruin asset to a completely renovated, refurbished, a stabilized community for the most part at the end of the day.
Got it. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That's just kind of one of those little things that exists. It's out there. It's a real issue for I'm sure plenty of investors, and they may not even think that it's possible to find someone that can help them turn that around. But obviously, you're able to, and that's definitely worth spending some time and educating on. So thank you for doing that, Jaime. We've got just a couple of questions left. Go ahead.
One more thing, Michael, if I could say, because you said something pretty important, where you said sometimes as an investor, you go in and it says, that's too much. There's no way I can do that. There's no way I have the tools to be able to take. And something specific about that property that I was telling you about, they were out of state clients. So they definitely didn't have any contacts in San Antonio. So that's a big thing too, as an investor. If you're going into a market and you don't know anybody, that doesn't mean that you can't invest in it, because if it's a market that for some reason it's producing and you want to be part of it, just make sure that you, once again, you surround yourself with the right crew, right team, especially the property manager, because they usually have most of the team put together already. That way you can, invest in that community that too. And that was the situation with these guys. Yeah. No contact, nothing. But once again, that's what the team is there for. It's an extension of you, the investor, right? And even if it's a 32 units or just a single family home, it's the same thing. So an investor shouldn't be scared off, or that shouldn't be a factor if they surround themselves with the right team, saying, oh, well, I don't know anybody. I don't know any contractors. I don't know the laws. I don't know any property managers in that area, so I can't invest in there. Don't let that be part of the deciding factor. It's more of, let me get the right team in whichever market I'm in. I should be able to get in there.
Beautiful. You've kind of let the cat out of the bag just a little bit on this next question, but you didn't go deep into it at all. And I think this is one of the most important questions to discuss about your business, about you and SPM and everything that you guys do, because I think this is one of your big selling points and one of the things that makes you unique. But you had alluded just a little bit about managing out of city or out of state properties. As the years have gone by, I think this has gotten to be more common because of technology and things like that. Whereas before, somebody had to hop on a plane to go look at a property. Now, obviously, everything can be done purely virtual, purely digital. But you have spent some time over the last years developing a system to make this specific process work very, very well. Please go ahead and tell us about this, because I think this is really significant, Jaime. And I think this is probably one of the strongest things that SPM does.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, that's something throughout the years has been cultivated. Like anything, like hindsight 2020, we can look back and see how great it's worked. But if we go back in time saying, what the two biggest factors that have led us here, two things. One, when I first started investing in the early 2000s, there wasn't any of the tools or resources that we're utilizing right now that I wish at that time I would have had. So many of the things that we do right now is just, it was created out of necessity at one point. So that's first and foremost, right? Second, in the market that we find ourselves in, San Antonio, Military City, USA, we have so many military clients that, of course, they're stationed for X amount of years, and then they're restationed out of state, out of country. So over that time, because of those two factors, we've been able to evolve to a point of providing a service that, along with technology, to your point earlier, where now about 65 to 75% of our clientele are out of state, out of country, because we fine tuned the process of, hey guys, I know that you're not here, but with today's technology and our systems and processes, it's as if you are. Because we walk the clients, whether it's if they're buying a property with that sight unseen, well, quote unquote sight unseen. Of course, we see it through live chats or videos. But we're still walking through the property. We're having conversations while we're walking through the property. We're having conversations during the inspections. We're having conversations and videos during negotiations. So it's not necessarily unseen. There's appropriate communication and sites and planning. And at the end of the day, it's more attainable for individuals that are not local. Right. And that's kind of, it didn't initially grow intentionally that way. It just has grown and evolved over the years where now we can identify that, hey, this is a service that we provide, and we provide it well because we've been doing it for so long. And it just, it's grown and morphed into what it is today.
Yeah. So basically what you're saying is that this pathway here has been a very organic one for you. You didn't really say, you know what, we're going to focus on this. It just kind of naturally, went that path. And then you embraced it, obviously. And then you said, well, we've got a pretty significant amount of people doing this. Let's build it out. Let's really go all in on this thing. And that sounds like that's what you've been able to do. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. No, and that's exactly how it played out. And of course, once again, hindsight being 2020, it's in today's technology, it allows for so much flexibility, so much insight, so much information. It makes it so much easier for so many of out of state, out of country investors to, whether it be South Texas, San Antonio, Dakota, at the end of the day, what does it come down to? Again, it's the team. What team have you placed together? That's the most important part.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's huge. I got one last question for you, Jaime, and then we'll go ahead and wrap up. Can you just kind of tell us a little bit more about, obviously you shared some of this throughout this entire podcast, and again, I thank you so much for doing so, but just give us a little wrap up as far as your experience and your credentials that relate to this business that you have in this space so that we have it just very clear and kind of laid out for this particular question?
Okay. Credentials. Wow. Okay. Well, that's a new one. Let's, experience wise, I don't know to what extent we want to go, but early 2000s, I started investing in real estate myself, renovating properties, turning around, selling them, flipping them before it was actually very popular to do, before any of the popular shows that we all know of nowadays. But at that time, it was a hobby. It was a hobby of mine. I got licensed as a licensed realtor in 2007. And at that point, as we all know, the writing was already kind of on the wall that the market was going to kind of start slowing down. And of course, 2008, 2009 and 10 come around. The landscape really changed in real estate, but that was such a great learning time, because we were able to see as a market, so much of the hardships that were going on, but we learned so much during that time, that so many, once again, many of our relationships that we utilize today, so much of the insight and knowledge that we have implemented over the years to build our systems, our process, our team, came from those times. Throughout those years, because it wasn't until 2011 that SPM came to be, became its own entity. Prior to that, it was a side division or a subdivision of a brokerage. That's during that time frame. That's when a lot of the, once again, systems, the sources, the resources that we have today came about. I've been blessed to have a phenomenal team with me. Employee number one, she's been with me going on about, I think this is 14 years. Without her, our assistant property manager that's been with us, I want to say about 8 years now. Just them two have been, the core of this group, have been the core of this team. They've led so much of the growth, the resources, the tools that have been built, and today continue to just, work and evolve and be the architects of what we're trying to move on and how can we better our services for our clients? How can we better our presentation and products for our residents? How do we keep growing and cultivating our relationships with our vendors? Because at the end of the day, once again, it's all of us that come together and are able to provide a pretty good product for an investor.
That's wonderful. That's exactly what I was looking for. Man, you answered so many questions and you did such an incredible job, Jaime, of explaining all these things. You're a wealth of knowledge. I mean, it's very crystal clear in just a short conversation with you that you have the experience that you have because, you're able to just kind of, I mean, this stuff just comes out. You could probably answer these in your sleep. You know, you've been, you've been absorbing this stuff.
I don't know about that.
it was good info and I learned a lot. I really learned a lot just from this one podcast, and I know others will too. So thank you for taking the time to join us today on this podcast and for answering all of our questions as it relates to your business and property management as well. Thank you for joining us.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for the opportunity. It was great talking to you. I think you said it best earlier when you said that I learned more than I anticipated. And I think that's the biggest thing for us is that it's just trying to educate, trying to inform, just like anything else in life. It's if we have the relevant information, we can make the most educated decision. And that's what we're here for, is that it's just to be able to provide the relevant information.
Absolutely. Jaime, thank you again.
Michael, thank you.
And that does it for another episode of Business Innovators Radio. We'll catch you here next time.
Thanks for listening to Business Innovators Radio. To hear all episodes featuring leading industry influencers and trendsetters, visit us online at businessinnovatorsradio.com today.